Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and I'm here along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you today?
Man, I'm tired, but it's been a beautiful Sunday. Like, I know you have to work Sunday, so not to rub this in or nothing like that, but me and a couple of friends. Go ahead.
I'm out working in the middle of the weather, and so I can understand why you would think, or why you would think I wouldn't think it's beautiful, because I'm out in the heat all day. It gets a little uncomfortable for me, and plus I like cooler weather to begin with.
That's right, you do like your rain, you're walking in the rain and stuff like that, but I just started biking recently, not like serious biking where I got the bike shorts and the helmet and the entitled attitude and stuff like that, but you know, I have a bike that I can ride to work now, and I live close enough to downtown that I can ride to get to games, or I can just ride to the 16th Street Mall if I need to get a thing, or, you know, just nifty stuff like that. And so some friends and I went and, we went and rode Sloan's Lake, and I had to do a little research after the fact to see what we did, because we did about 3 laps, which isn't that much. It's about a 2.5 mile circumference, which is pretty, for someone who's, a portly fellow who is just starting to do something athletic on a regular basis. I figured doing 7.5 miles around Sloan's Lake and then riding all the way down to the 16th Street Mall to get gelato with my friends and then come back. I did about 13 miles in the day, and there's hills involved for the 16th Street Mall part. And well, not the mall itself, but riding to the mall involves some hills. I'm relatively proud of myself, 13 miles.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
I haven't biked in a long time. I don't think I have a working bike. I get all my exercise via walking and jogging and so forth. But I remember having a terrible difficulty with biking uphill. I was awful at it. And I don't have weak legs either. I just couldn't manipulate the bike correctly to get it to do that.
I wasn't
pushing down correctly or whatever. But
coming home from work now, I have this one final hill to go across, to climb up to get to my house before I get to my neighborhood. And what sucks is a hill in the neighborhood too, but it's not as drastic of a hill. But I'll just watch like the signpost, and I'm doing the thing like, all right, let's see if we can make it to the shadow of that next signpost before we downshift.
Mm-hmm.
Did we make it? All right, made that one. Okay, let's try to make it to the next one, and then see how many signposts I can pass before I have to downshift. And by that point, my thighs are screaming at me, and yeah, I'm just glad I can make it all the way up the hill without having to stop and walk.
That's another thing that probably didn't help was I did not have a geared bike. It was just a regular bike with no gears.
I don't think it's so much you did it wrong then, but you just didn't have the tool to really do it well with.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, yeah, you got people out there who can, you know, climb and whatever because they're in great shape and aren't carrying their own weight along with the weight of the bike or whatever, but, well, you know what I mean. They're not carrying all the extra weight that I have anyways. So, yeah, some people make it look easier than others, and they're called in-shape people, and I'm not one of them, so I can say, for me at least, that if I didn't have a geared bike, I would not be making it up those hills. I would be crying the entire way up or something like that.
Yeah,
whatever the horrifyingly exhausted version of crying is.
Yeah, I can have that image in my head. Okay, well, with that seemingly now traditional introductory off-topic bit out of the way, let's...
Everyone wants to know what I do with my Sunday. That's important. Because everyone cares, right? Right? Well, there's no one else on the call, so I guess no one else cares. Well, someone out there cares, and I bet we're going to get like one comment that says, "I care, Andrew, hooray!" And it's going to be, you know, Charlie or someone, and it's going to be just great.
And it's going to be the only comment we get on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Charlie.
All right, so let's talk at least, let's get started here talking about these last three games we played against the Yankees. It was the first series loss that we had in a little while, and I mean, when you're playing the Yankees, they've been having a pretty good year this year, and I don't think you can be too disappointed, particularly since we weren't really favored to win these past two games anyway. But I was just wondering if you wanted to get started with any thoughts you might have had on any of those three games.
Well, game one, I felt like, obviously if we'd lost game one, it would have ended up a sweep series, but something about game one, I just wanted to take that first one against Burnett just to kind of, like, prove it to ourselves that the Rockies aren't going to make every single pitcher in the face of the planet look like, well, CC Sabathia, who ended up looking like CC Sabathia. Like, AJ Burnett isn't a bad pitcher. He's just not a very great. He's not a great pitcher. He's a decent pitcher, and he's way overpaid for the amount of value he gives the Yankees. But the important thing is that he had that lockdown potential because he is a guy who can strike a lot of guys out, but he also has those flights of wildness, which we're all very familiar with. And the Rockies, this so far, like a lot of our May frustration ended up being, you know, we take these guys who are wild and we don't sit on their pitches, or we sit on their pitches and that's all we do, and then they just start throwing strikes suddenly with two on and one out, and somebody grounds into a double play, and they just keep wriggling, and you know they can't seem to take advantage of these pitchers. And they only scored 4 runs in the game, which isn't spectacular, but winning 4-2 against that Yankees lineup, it's down, especially with Ubaldo on the mound. It was a huge confidence booster to see Ubaldo shut down the Yankees. Well, we relatively shut him down. I mean, 7 strikeouts is a good game. The 4 walks weren't spectacular, but only 4 hits. I mean, 8 base runners over 7 innings is not a miserable outing.
Mm-mm.
And especially from what we've seen Ubaldo doing this season. But I guess the point is, I wanted to take that opener more than like any of the other games. And I would have loved to take the game on Sunday away from Nova, but obviously that wasn't in the books. Nova had, you know, a relatively poor outing. 6 innings, 4 runs, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks, and 3 homers. And not the best start. And especially two of those homers came off Wigginton's bat as well, which is very encouraging to see that, you know, they brought in Wigginton to be the guy who can hit on the road, and here he is, you know, hitting on the road. But back to what I was saying, the Friday start, they were able to get Burnett. That's all I cared about. Because Sabathia, and I hate to say it, it seems like the entire team was kind of on board with this, is that, like, we're not going to win against CeCe Sabathia. Why bother trying?
Yeah, that's actually something we might want to get to talking about in a little bit, but go ahead and keep going where you're going.
Well, with, I mean, Sabathia is a good pitcher, and with a team that we see once every 3 or 4 years tops, you know what, I just kind of want to watch Sabathia pitch, and for someone who doesn't watch Sabathia pitch very often, it kind of takes a different, I've seen him, you know, other games when I'm at the sports bar or whatever, and see the Yankees game on Sabathia's pitch, and I'm like, oh, it's Sabathia, and then go back and pay attention to what I was doing. But, like, watching that start, the dude's nasty. Like, he was locating everything everywhere. Like, he was dropping sliders in the outside corner and putting his out pitches exactly where he wanted them to. And that, that is just something we don't see out of a starter very often, especially for our team. I mean, we've seen some signs of it. Like, last year, Ubaldo did a lot of that. I wouldn't say it was nearly as surgical as Sabathia, you know, is and has been almost his entire career. But we've only seen flashes of that, and mostly it's from, like, guys like Rafael Betancourt, who, you know, throw a straight fastball and a slider with pinpoint accuracy. But to see a starter do that, I was just very, very impressed with Sabathia. And as disappointing as it was, because I want to be like, oh, yeah, we beat up on your mighty Sabathia, at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, if we're going to lose one of these games, it might as well be to him. And then today's game was obviously, or Sunday's game, I should say, was just that much more disappointing, is, I mean, they got some offense going. Gonzalez walked twice, scored on one of them. Helton walked once. Wigginton had 3 hits, 2 of them homers. Smith had a hit. Iannetta had 2 hits, which is kind of shocking because it's Chris Iannetta. But there's a lot of strikeouts today. And I felt with Ivan Nova pitching that the Rockies did have a chance to take this series. And Nicasio just wasn't on his best. And part of that, too, is they got some good weapons and know how to use them. And guys like Brett Gardner with that bunt single to lead off the 6th and things like that. It was a frustrating loss, but I don't know. I'm not going to let it get to me too much. And if this had been to the Giants or any other divisional rival, like, I would be much more upset. Because, like, we don't just get to brush this one off. We have to deal with this, because next time they come up, they're going to do the same thing. We got to figure out how to beat them. Whereas the Yankees, okay, it's done. We'll see in, you know, another 4 or 5 years. Who cares? Yeah, disappointed to lose any series, but MLB's kind of a joke anyway. Not a joke. That's the wrong way to put it, because the games all count and things like that. But you don't learn anything about your opponent and, like, oh, we're going to take this into the future. What are you going to do 5 years from now? Like, all right, we have this film from 4 years ago on how Matt Pagnosi looked against, okay, for Biondino, Pagnozzi. There. You happy? Even the guys in the air are calling it Pagnozzi. I'm pretty sure they just Americanized it when he came over, so.
Well,
yes,
it's
European, Vina.
It's, I mean, I obviously have a little bit of experience with Italian just because I took a couple classes there. I know Biondino knows a lot better than I do, but definitely that's the way his name is pronounced. It's not the proper pronunciation if you look from an Italian perspective, but again, it really doesn't matter. He probably just didn't know because I don't know how many times he's actually heard the name pronounced by, like, the TV team or the radio team or so forth, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm just making fun because I know he listens. And
yeah.
I'm just trying to call out all the people who comment on our articles, so maybe they'll, you know, comment more and be like, ah, you said my name with the podcast, blah. So we got Charlie and Bion covered so far. I'm pretty sure Pip listens to us, so we'll make fun of you or something later in the podcast, Pip, and then you can post Rockahol pictures or whatever you do to counteract me made fun of.
Okay.
You keep that in. You do not edit that out either. I'm calling people out today.
I'm not going to edit it out. I haven't edited much out in quite a while because
good. We've
been, I mean, last week, with last week's podcast, I was either going to edit the whole thing out or keep all of it. So I chose to keep all of it rather than have a 20-minute podcast.
Yeah. But anyways, just to kind of wrap the thought up, like, it sucks to lose a series 2-1. I'm glad they took the one they did and the way they did, because it was one of those games where, you know, runs weren't going to come too easily either way, either by the Rockies' own, you know, seeming incompetence against pitchers who were questionable, making them look like their upside. But I'm happy about that. I mean, I don't know why I wanted to beat AJ Burnett so much, but I guess I just did. Sabathia would have been nice to be like, oh yeah, we can swing with the big boys, but I'm not miserable because we lost against him. There's a reason he's as good as he is, and that's because he does things like that. And the Rockies have no familiarity with him. They've never had to face him for any extent of time ever because he pitched only, what, half a season? Granted, he made like 40 starts in that half season for Milwaukee because he pitched every other day, but the Rockies have no real history against Sabathia. So getting owned by Sabathia is not the worst thing on the face of the planet. Getting not owned, but, you know, letting the Yankees bullpen wriggle their way out of that game and, you know, with slap hits in the offense, you know, poking in the extra runs and stuff like that. It, I don't know. A frustrating game, especially, I think I've said just about everything I can about this. The game won, whatever, series over. Let's move on to the next series.
Going back to what you were saying when you were trying to articulate what your feelings were about interleague play, I agree because not only, is the game useless in the sense of building a book, but it's also the least beneficial to win because when you play a National League team, regardless of who they are, unless they're a division leader in an opposing division, you are making some kind of progress if you win, not only by adding to your win count, but by adding a loss to a competitor in some postseason race, divisional or wild card. But really, it doesn't affect our chances of going to the playoffs at all if the Yankees win. It just does if we lose. So we only get like half the benefit of winning and half the negative aspects of losing.
Yeah, so. We're not going against someone directly ahead of us, so it's not, we don't get that like two game bounce by losing and the other team winning. We the other games kind of need to take place and see what happens. What's the score in San Francisco right now? Why do I care about this right now? Because I'm a baseball fan, that's why.
That's a good reason, I guess.
Man, I'm tired, man. I have had a long day of riding my bicycle around, and being in the sun. I think the sun took a lot of it out of me.
Yeah, the sun is not my friend.
Let's see. Yeah, the Giants. Giants up 3-1 on the Indians. Stupid Indians and their stupidness. I like the Indians.
We were going to use that Yankees discussion there as a little bit of a segue to talk about Aaron Cook. You know, obviously been a controversial figure for the past couple seasons, not only because his high pay grade kind of throws off the perception of what he should be capable of when people, I think, need to remember that those really aren't necessarily congruent with one another. Like you were talking about earlier, look at AJ Burnett, for example. So I keep I keep bringing this up. I might consider writing an article about this because I find it so fascinating. But even with 42 players who are on the roster, or if you want to take the position Andrew was taking last week, two that are sort of half on the roster or whatever. Point being, we have 42 players under Major League contract right now. And not a single one of them is going to be a direct free agent at the end of the season. So Cook is one of those players who has a mutual option that's almost certainly going to be turned down. And we've known for the past couple seasons that, you know, he's kind of ticking towards his end, the end of his time with the Rockies. And any good we can get out of him at this point is just kind of a bonus because, the expectations, I think, are higher than they should be because of the $9.25 million he's making. But, you know, where he is in his career, he's a fifth starter type at this point. So, what are your thoughts on not only his start here, but, you know, he's been up for what, four starts now, maybe?
Something like that.
On where he is, I guess the point is at this point we know that he's going to be pretty much done with us at the end of the season, unless we, for some reason, re-sign him to a much lower salary. But, you know, we're getting close to that time where he's going to be heading into the sunset, if you will. So,
Well, so far this season, Cook has made four starts. In only one of those starts did he make it through the sixth inning successfully, and that was against Detroit, which wasn't a great start either. The things that have been good about Cook is his ground balling tendencies have seemed to have come back. Over those four starts, he struck out, 17, 28, 43 ground balls to only 9, 14, 18 fly balls.
And that's about what you'd expect from a pitcher of Cook's, style. Yeah.
Exactly. But he's got, the strikeout numbers really aren't there, which is to be expected, but I mean his strikeout to walk ratio is really hovering around one. He has two more strikeouts than he does walks.
That's not surprising either, though, is it?
Well, not terribly, but he's walking. I mean, for a guy, I don't know. I'm thinking about Cook's earlier career.
That's actually a good question. From my perspective, we all know that he doesn't strike out very many people, but
no,
it seems like for a pitcher like Cook, that ratio would be somewhere around there. But does this mean that he's actually walking more people as well?
It does. If you look at his career numbers from 2005 through 2009, he walked less than three batters per nine innings. The best being 2005 when he walked 1.73 batters per nine, but he also struck out about 2.59. Just ridiculously low ball not in play numbers.
Right.
And, you know, since then, I mean, I'm looking at his other numbers here. 2007, 239 walks per nine. 2008, 204. 2008 was a great season for Cook. He's a 4.7 WAR pitcher, much akin to his 2006 campaign where he was a 4.3 WAR pitcher. This is going by Fangraphs for those of you curious. And then as those walk numbers started to peak their way up, then the value numbers started dropping down, which is to be expected because so much of Cook's effectiveness needs to come from keeping guys off the base paths via walk. Because with a guy who relies so heavily on ball and play success,
people are going to get hits.
The ball is going to find its way through. I still remember like one of the worst examples of these starts from last season. It was against Minnesota, and I swear every single baseball that they hit against him found a hole. And they weren't well-struck balls. They weren't smoking grounders that, you know, would take an absurd diving stop to make. And no, they were just bouncers that found just enough, you know, daylight to get through that they did. And it was a bad start for Cook. But we saw some of that with the Yankees start, too, against CC Sabathia. But he also had a couple of bad innings there with you know, screamers of the wall and things like that. And when you're not a good strikeout guy, I mean, he's got a 3.79 career strikeouts per nine mark, which isn't great. And as a full-time starter, even in his good years, it was four, maybe four. And like, he's never cracked 4.5 strikeouts per nine innings. But the last two seasons, well, I guess I should be saying 2011 and 2010, we're looking at 3.5 walks per nine. And that's the kind of wildness that we would accept from Ubaldo Jimenez. Because not only does Jimenez get the ground balls to get out of there, he also strikes out about twice as many bats. Well, maybe not twice as many, but, you know, good time and a half better. You know, 7-8, somewhere in that range. And he's much harder to hit than Cook is. And a lot of the success that Cook has had is when his sinker is biting and it has that sharp dive away from right-hander, or away from left-handers and into right-handers that basically makes you top the baseball. But we just seen too many, you know, seriously questionable, you know, starts from Cook now where it's not just an issue of, well, I mean, you could make a case that it's an issue of ball and play bad luck. A .378 batting average on balls in play is not realistic. It's just, those are silly numbers.
Yeah, that's kind of what, I remember was kind of the defense of Cook last season. You know, people were getting on his case pretty hard, not just because of his performance, but also because he was keeping Chacin out of the rotation for about a 4 or 5 week time there. And, I remember the attitude that the fan base in general, not just at our blog, but around the internet in general, seemed to be really down on him. And, you know, we've obviously established here that his walks have gone up over the past couple of years, but at the same time, he's had some issues with where the balls are going. And
if you look at his 2011 splits here, he's at a 23.8% line drive percentage. That's bad. Like, it's not just ball and play luck at this point. Yeah, we have seen, and I'm sure everyone who's listening who wants to defend Cook, and, you know, I think you should defend Cook, because he's been with the franchise forever, and he's a really quality character, and everyone likes him, and he does the commercials, and he's just a cool guy. And I mean, he's the kind of guy that I wish I could just, you know, take out to lunch or something and hang out with him. He seems like a genuinely nice guy that you'd walk away from an experience of them being like, wow, I like that Aaron Cook. But, you know, that doesn't really, that's a great reason to defend him, I guess. But he's not giving the team the opportunities to win that he needs to. Like, for an inning-eating kind of guy, when you think of your inning eaters, you think of, you know, LeVon Hernandez or I guess back in the day, Carlos Silva. I don't even know what to make of Carlos Silva anymore. But, I mean, you get the kind of, maybe even like a Josh Fogg example, where they're going to have an ERA up around 5-ish, maybe even a little bit higher, you know, give or take 0.2, 0.3, and they're going to pitch you 175-plus innings every season. That's an inning eater. Problem is that Cook's sitting on, he's sitting on a 5.5 ERA right now, which isn't absolutely atrocious, but we gotta remember too, when these inning eating guys were acceptable, is when the team, like the 2006 Rockies, when it was Josh Fogg or Byung-Hyun Kim, might as well get a guy who can go out and give you 7 innings, 4 runs, but give you 7 innings and those 4 runs will trickle in, you know? With Cook, it's, I don't know, as a stat guy, the advanced numbers say that it's A, too small of a sample, and B, that his fielding independent numbers are much better than his actual ERA suggests. His FIP is 330, which is good, which is downright good. But his XFIP is 419, which isn't fantastic, but it's far from bad. And, it grades out to be about, let's see, where's that number there? Where did it go? About 100, it's a 112 XFIP minus, as base, or Fangraphs calls it. It's the same thing as ERA plus. Just look at it that way. He's pitching, according to XFIP, 12% better than your major league average starter. I just don't buy the fielding independent numbers on this, in this particular case, because he has so much of his game is relying on balls in play. And yes, he is getting a good amount of ground balls, which is good, but those line drive numbers are just not acceptable. The upside for him, and I think the only thing that's really keeping him afloat right now, is the fact that he has yet to allow a home run, which is also very good, but why would you need to? I mean, just hit a single off him, because that's what he does. He allows way too many singles. And Renk put it as he has one more start, and then they're going to – who knows what's going to happen next.
I was about to ask. I don't really know what can be done about moving him. I mean, people have talked about it over and over and over again, and we have to keep reminding him, you know, it's not going to be easy to do that. It's not going to be impossible, but – it's not going to be convenient for really anybody. And I mean, we'll
be eating a large amount of his salary.
Yes.
That's a fact.
Hopefully, there's no way. Hopefully less than we would if we outright released him. That's kind of that's kind of the idea behind eating something salary in the first place. It's not the ideal, but it's better than it would be elsewhere.
But if they hypothetically did make a trade for Cook, we'd likely be taking a unpleasant-looking contract back in exchange as well. And maybe or maybe not that contract will be in the form of someone we can use. Or maybe just, hey, it's Preston Wilson and Charlie Johnson. Eat some money. We'll take Mike Hampton off your hands. Maybe it's maybe not that drastic, obviously, but you know, any trade that's going to be made is going to involve the Rockies eating money, whether mm-hmm. it's in the form of another player or just flat out here's $5 million. Good luck, you know.
Do you think there's any chance that they put him into long relief?
Personally, here's the thing. When you say when last year Cook got, and it's actually a. Everyone was freaking out last year. I might be mistaken on this, but my memory is that Jeff Francis got his rotation spot back after his year on the DL with shoulder surgery, and then it was him blocking Yolis Chacin at first.
Francis may have been the one who pushed him out. I can't really remember at this point, but everyone was complaining that because Francis was doing better than Cook was, at least at the start there, and they wanted Cook to go to the bullpen and Chacin to go into the rotation.
And that makes sense. I really, what it comes down to for me is who's Aaron Cook blocking, and he's not really blocking anyone per se. If Aaron Cook did lose his rotation job, Clay Mortensen would just slide right back in. I don't see them calling anyone else up. I don't see them going to Friedrich at this point. I don't see them calling up Greg Reynolds or anyone else from the AAA rotation. No one's really earning it down there.
It's getting harder and harder to add any more people to the roster right now. I mean, we're already two over because of the 60-day guys. I would not expect any more immediate reassignments to the 40-man roster or any more purchases from the minors, at least until we decide who we want to let go. And
yeah.
In that hypothetical article I was mentioning earlier about the condition of our roster, we're going to need to make some decisions about people this offseason because we're not going to leave these same 40 people on the roster.
Well, yeah.
So my
thought is that if they somehow were able to make a trade involving Aaron Cook, that would obviously free up his roster spot, and then Mortensen would take his rotation spot as well, and then whoever we got in return would likely be the one to take the 40-man spot.
Yes.
Whereas, the thing is, though, Mortensen isn't necessarily going to go and provide anything better than Aaron Cook is.
They're very similar pitchers.
They really are. They're not relying on big-time strikeout stuff. They're relying on a lot of balls in play and ground ball luck, or not luck necessarily, but skill, I guess, to keep them afloat in questionable outings. And if we take a look at Clay Mortensen here, it's funny, Clayton Mortensen, when we first acquired him, he's Clayton Mortensen. Fangrass has him as Clay Mortensen, and I'm kind of wondering, I wonder what he really goes by. Is it Clay or Clayton?
One other thing that I can joke about, that Baseball Reference had his name spelled wrong, his last name. They had it as Mortensen instead of Mortensen.
Yeah. With Mortensen, I mean, honestly, if you look at the ERA, his ERA, it's a 3.29 ERA with a 2.39 batting average on balls in play. So we're basically looking at, if we just ignore everything else for a moment here and kind of just look at those by themselves, you could say Mortensen is as lucky as Cook is unlucky, and that they both would probably balance out at a 4.5 ERA or something like that. But Mortensen has actually been wilder than Cook, giving up more home runs than Cook. Granted, he did it over 52 innings and 6 starts rather than Cook's 4 starts.
Mm-hmm.
But his xFIP is at 4.36, which suggests that he would be a... Actually, the park adjusted, all that crazy stuff, says he'd be sick. He's pitched at a 16% better than average level if you buy into xFIP. But the irony of this whole thing is that he's grading out right now over his 52 innings as a replacement level player, whereas Cook is at 0.5 WAR for the season. You know, it kind of depends on how you read into value numbers. I know a lot of people don't like them. It's a back and forth kind of situation. While Mortensen has been allowing a 13.2 line drive percent, Cook has been allowing a, you know, 10 points higher on that scale. So, I mean, really, if we demoted Cook to the bullpen, which I don't think is that unfathomable of an idea, I wrote an article about it last year when Cook was struggling about how Cameron Lowe, who I believe is with Milwaukee right now, he was the same story, except he didn't have the success that Cook did in the background, which is what's keeping Cook afloat in the rotation, you know, what's giving him any vote of confidence because he's done well in the past. whereas Lowe had nothing to build off of. But in the bullpen, his strikeout stuff got a bit nastier. His ground ball numbers stayed roughly the same, and he was a bit, he has been an effective reliever in his career as a reliever. Whereas we'd have to probably put up with some growing pains with Cook as a reliever. And if you were to re-up him as a reliever, it would have to be at a drastically reduced rate, because we're not paying somebody, you know, $8 million to be a non-closer. And, you know, say what you will about closers making too much. That's not really the case in point here. So Cook to the bullpen isn't that miserable of an idea, but I don't think Mortensen's going to necessarily provide that much of an upgrade on Aaron Cook.
Mm-hmm. Now, one potential wild card that a lot of people have forgotten about is Rogers. He's not healthy at the moment still. He re-injured himself on his rehab assignment, so he's really not anywhere close to coming back. But, and again, I know you and a lot of other people aren't necessarily really excited about what you think he can bring anyway, but, you know, he's had some success as a starter, not prolonged success or necessarily bulky success that really suggests that he's necessarily, you know, an excitable return to the pitching rotation. But at the same time, I feel like when he's healthy, they're going to at least consider him as somebody to come in for either somebody like Cook or maybe even Nicasio, because you know, his rotation spot can't really be that solidified either at this point.
There's a big when slash if with Esmiel Rogers, and I've never had faith in him. I mean, I might have come out a couple times and said, hey, that's a good start, maybe that's promising. Someone might call me on this. I just have never felt comfortable with Esmiel Rogers as a pitcher in the major leagues. I think it's another one of those jerking him around between the rotation and the bullpen kind of things, and you know, some pitchers can handle that, some pitchers can't, and Esmiel Rogers, I don't believe, is one of those who can. I feel like they need to figure out a role for him and leave him there, but he's just not good starting depth. I would rather have Mortensen in the rotation than Esmiel Rogers.
Okay.
With Mortensen, we're getting effectively old Aaron Cook production. Maybe not as good of old Aaron Cook production, but we're getting old Aaron Cook production. Whereas with Rogers, I mean, you don't even know what to compare him to.
No.
He's questionable. He gets rattled. He can't throw secondary stuff as well as we'd like to see. He's got a hittable fastball. We're kind of quibbling over, this is like last week and our, you know, talking about backup catchers. We're quibbling over the number five spot in the rotation, but we don't want to say every fifth game the Rockies are guaranteed to lose because the starter can't, you know, put up six quality innings. Cook's been close-ish, but he's just too hittable anymore. And I don't know what to do with him because the bullpen demotion seems like the best idea of the trade, but I want to make a case for him that Aaron Cook's on the verge of rebounding, but we've seen some of his sinker looks like it's moving well because he's getting all these ground balls, but he can't throw it for strikes as well as he used to, and his secondary stuff just isn't that lights out, and it just isn't that good. And I don't want to say he's a complete flat-out liability, but it's kind of getting to that point. He's probably the most hittable pitcher in our rotation right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a sense, he will have always probably been the most hittable pitcher in the rotation. But,
But even more so, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
Like, if we even just pretend that some of that batting average, on balls in play, bad luck, is just that bad luck, like A-Rod's, bouncer through the left side. That was against Belial. Hang on. Well, just any, I mean, he had a lot of bouncers through whatever side against the Yankees. And even if we pretend that those were just a bit more toward Tulowitzki and Tulowitzki made the ridiculous play or whatever, even if we take some of that out, I mean, that drops his ERA to, what, 5? We're not talking about a complete night and day resurgence if we just normalize batting average on balls and play luck, because a 23% line drive rate is just not acceptable, and it's not good enough. And he's... I don't know, I have very little faith. He used to be one of my stalwarts, you know? Like, Aaron Cook, oh, don't worry, there's a guy on first base, whatever, here comes a sinker, and here comes a double play ball. And that's what happened in 2006 and 2008. He would do that, and it would be awesome, and everyone loved to watch it. But now it's just, oh, there's a runner on first and second, alright, one of those guys is gonna score, and then he might get the double play ball. He seems, I don't know if rattled is even the right word. But whatever it is, it's less effective, and it's disheartening because you love the guy, but we want to win, and we need to have the right guys in the right places if we want to try another one of these ridiculous late season runs like the Rockies are so famous for. And Aaron Cook's just not the guy to get us there. But again, the problem goes back to, well, who is? And I think this does, you know, I'm obviously not the only person thinking this, because the Rockies have been publicly shopping for a starting pitcher, someone like Wandy Rodriguez or just someone, you know, anybody who is going to be better than Aaron Cook or Clay Mortensen or Esmiel Rogers, you know, assuming he was even ready to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And the team obviously recognizes that the rotation has holes right now, because Ubaldo is still a question mark on which Ubaldo is going to show up when he takes the mound next time. De La Rosa is obviously gone for the season. Hamill's been having trouble getting the strikeouts. Justine's been masterful, but Juan Nicasio is starting to show signs of, he, like, I don't want to say true talent level, because he's not, even at his bad starts, he's going to be better than his bad starts. And
he's starting to show signs of his true experience level, is the way I'd put it.
That's a much better way to put it, He's a good strike-throwing machine kind of guy, and everyone loves to see the good strike-throwing machine kind of guy, but strike-throwing machines give up a lot of hits, too. And, well, I mean, not Roy Halladay, obviously, but young, inexperienced guys with questionable secondary stuff who throw a lot of strikes end up getting a lot of hits against them as well. So I'm not saying Nicasio is not going to turn it around or not going to, you know, take a next step or whatever. He's too young to even, like, say anything definitive about him. We just got to kind of take the good, take the bad, take the rest, and there you have Juan Nicasio.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's finish this up with a discussion about Eric Young Jr., because I also know that you had some thoughts, speaking of potential changes in roster spot, about...
Well, I'm just voicing the opinion that a lot of people on Purple Row have been having, and I tend to agree with. Young is the most one-dimensional guy on the roster. Like, Giambi can at least play a halfway competent first base. I'm not going to say good. I'm going to say steadily below average, but at least knows how to play a position. And that, I mean, even though it's the only position he can play, with Wigginton pretty much entrenched at third base until Ian Stewart shows, I mean, he's been showing signs of life with home runs and stuff like that,
Stewart had two home runs in today's AAA game.
Yeah, Brian Kilpatrick, one of our writers, if you weren't aware, he was texting me during the game, and apparently, Cole Garner got into it with the Salt Lake catcher, and that's pretty entertaining. And then Stewart cranked two homers, but you know,
okay,
which is awesome. It's awesome. You love to see Stewart hitting home runs, but there's no question. Can Ian Stewart hit AAA pitchers and hit home runs off them? Oh, absolutely. Are they still going to strike him out a whole bunch? Because you got to realize that a player's deficiencies in the minor leagues are going to become glaringly spotlighted in the majors, and their upsides are likely going to drop. For guys who are in Stewart's situation, not everyone is going to hit that, obviously, but they're sending him down to get his attitude together, because we've been hearing a lot of this now, that Stewart is at that point that Chris Nelson was at, where it's like, dude, get it together, you're gone. It's not that we don't like you, it's not that we don't see your upside, but if you don't get it together, you're gone. And that's a reality that everyone in every job, no matter what, has to face at some point, where you hit that one growing up spot where it's like, oh, I can't coast anymore. Stewart, I don't want to say he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but, I mean, he got a lot of patience with the Rockies front office, and, you know, he's doing his time in the minors again now, and good. Figure it out, man. Decide that you want to come and work really, really hard and figure this, and he's gonna. I think he's gonna. Because I just feel like he's gonna get this awakening moment, because he just enjoyed being up here too much. And I think he's going to realize what potential and what future he could have with this organization. And he needs to take the bull by the horns at this point and, you know, figure it out. Anyways, with Wigginton entrenched at third base, because Stewart's still a big-time question mark as to ever taking back third base, we got to wonder, you know, what's Eric Young doing on this roster? Because the point was that Giambi can at least back up Helton, and he can at least play first base okay. I mean, we've seen him make a couple grabs anyways. He's not good. And I'll reemphasize that I'm not trying to pretend that Jason Giambi is, you know, at age 40, whatever he's at, can suddenly field again. No. But the problem is that we know what his role specifically is. Eric Young Jr. is pretty much a glorified pinch runner at this point. We saw him in right field against the Yankees, and it was just a joke. Like, I mean, it was yakety sack. This is spring training stuff. And we can talk about, you know, Tracy's choice to start him at all in a minute here. But Eric Young does not have a spot on the infield, because Chris Nelson and Johnny Herrera are the second baseman. Eric Young can't field a position adequately. We've seen that just too many times. And his batting numbers are worse than Herrera's. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'd rather see Johnny Herrera starting than Eric Young Jr. because he can at least field. At least there's an upside there. Yeah, if Eric Young somehow gets on base, yeah, he could steal pretty well, but that's just it. When is he going to get on base? You can't steal first, as we used to always say about Willie Taveras, and so many people have said about so many other fast guys in the majors. You can't steal first base, and it's true of Taveras. It's true of Young. You just can't steal first base, and you got to find a way to do something better than just be that fast guy who can't field. And at this point, we've kind of reached do or die for him.
Yeah, definitely.
He had a good start of the season in AAA Colorado Springs, and the thing was, everybody always worries about Colorado Springs players doing well because it's such a hitter-friendly environment, like absurdly hitter-friendly environment. But he was doing well on the road, too. I mean, the power numbers were down a bit, but that's to be expected. But he was doing well on the road, too, and it's like, oh yeah, Eric Young's for real now, and he looks so much better than last year, and he's just done nothing. And if this is the 2005-2006 Rockies still, and Young was on the roster, I'd say, sure, keep him going. Just let him start. Just throw him out there every day and see what happens. Maybe he'll, pick something up and get better somehow. But when you have other guys who at least have some sort of offensive promise above that and defensive ability at any position, they're going to get the playing time. And so Young is being relegated to these right field, really? Really? You want, really? We're so questionable at Seth Smith in right field because he was facing a tough lefty that we put in Eric Young Jr. in right field. Oh my goodness gracious. Words cannot describe how confusing that start was. And I hate to say it, but send him back down. There's just no room for him on this roster. And, if you're listening to Eric, I'm sorry to be harsh about this because we've seen some good things from you, but Eric Young doesn't listen to this podcast. What am I kidding? But it's just the truth of it. He would have to be starting every day to even start to get some sort of upside going, and he hasn't earned the right to start every day. Somebody phrased it well on the message boards, and I can't remember who it was, but they said Eric Young is a starter, but he's not good enough to play as a starter. He's not a utility guy because he can't play positions.
Right.
He can't play anything. He'd be like the once in a while you see him, speedster DH kind of guy, if it's an American League team. I mean, at this point, he's trade bait. He's got to be trade bait. I don't see anything else to do with him at this point, because I would rather call Josh Fields up. Even though he can't field, he can at least hit. Well, we think he can hit. I would give anybody in the minor leagues a shot more. And this, again, if we're going to be putting Eric Young in the right field as a right-hander against a lefty, bring up Cole Garner. What are we waiting on about Cole Garner if we're going to be really just dinking around with this whole, let's try Eric Young in the outfield some more? I get that they're trying to use his speed the same way they did it with his dad, because his dad played, Eric Young Sr. played left field with the Dodgers when he was traded over in the Pedro Estacio trade.
He also played left field one season for us, 94,
I
believe.
Right. He did second baseman and left fielder, and he was not good at it, but he was competent at it, and he was good enough to not be a complete liability in left field, and he was able to get on base at a decent clip and steal bases. That's what Eric Young Jr. needs to be able to do, but he can't field. He just can't field. And it's such a rough thing to harp on a guy for, but when you don't have a bat to back up your lack of fielding, you're just kind of worthless to the club. And yeah, having him as a late inning pinch runner would be great if this were the playoffs. I would not hate having Eric Young Jr. as a pinch runner in the playoffs. I'll say that for a fact. But with somebody like Cole Garner, who he's very much a Colorado Springs hitter, but he's not miserable on the road. He's putting up a decent, 850 OPS last time I checked. I'd have to double-check on that, and it might have dropped or risen since then. But Garner's a decent hitter, and he's right-handed, and he knows how to play a corner outfield position, even if it's not that great. I would rather have Cole Garner for these starts against the absurd lefties, who they don't trust Seth Smith to start against. I'd rather see, if you're going to throw out an all-righty lineup, put Garner in there. Young has no business being in a starting lineup, and that's kind of what it comes down to.
I really think that both for the team itself and for the fans, Young obviously has a lot going for him in popularity anyway, just because of his father, and then also he had good numbers down in AAA. But at the same time, I think that he was kind of being looked at as sort of a replacement for Dexter Fowler, who everyone was down on at the time, and everyone was really excited because even though he can't field, oh, he can bunt, and oh, he can steal, which is two things that Fowler wasn't doing, and I feel like they're trying to lean too much on that because their idea is, oh, well, before we didn't have anybody who could do those things, and
yeah,
now we do.
We don't still, though, because he doesn't play.
Right. That's exactly where I was going with that, yeah.
And I'm not harping on them for not playing him. I wouldn't play him either. I wouldn't even, I mean, if I were running this team, I would not have him in the major leagues. He'd be in AAA right now, and that's just what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're obviously trying to salvage something out of him because he was playing mostly outfield. They knew he wasn't going to be a starting second baseman. That ship sailed. I mean, you could argue it sailed at the beginning of his career, but you've always mentioned that Young is a guy who always keeps surprising at every level and finding his way up to the next one. And, they determined that they wanted to try and diversify him, and he's never really looked great in the outfield, but I guess their thought was, why not give him some practice out there and see if we can at least mold him into sort of a pseudo-utility player. But, you know, it's looking less and less like even that's going to be realistic.
I mean, God bless him, he's trying. He's obviously not lazing about. He's not working at this. I mean, just the amount of effort he puts in. I mean, just even when we watched him, like, play that botched hit to right field where he, like, stumbled and the guy got Gardner got another base out of it or something like that. He doesn't have the arm for right field, but he was trying. And I will defend him in that regard. This isn't like he's known every level he's come up with. Everybody keeps telling him, you're not going to make it. You are not a top flight prospect. Good luck. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And so, yay, effort. Effort is great. Everyone loves effort, but effort has to translate into production at some point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Does that wrap up all the discussion of that? Because I can't think of much more to say about Eric Young Jr.
All I really want to say is that we're done talking about Eric Young Jr. I think the team should be, too, at this point. It's kind of heartbreaking because you want to see him come up and be Eric Young, the second, you know, the quite literally the Eric Young Jr. who has all the same skills, had some production as his dad, and fun things like that. I mean, we saw the ad last year, which is really funny, with Eric Young Sr., you know, chasing him around, being like, oh, you forgot your teddy bear, and all the silly stuff like that. I loved that ad. That just warmed my heart. But at this point now, trade him. Just trade him. I'm not saying we're going to get anyone amazing out of the deal, but see if we can get value out of him, because I don't think at this point in the team's progress that his value is going to come as a starting anything. It's going to be in the minors and as potential trade bait. Because, I mean, someone's going to be interested in a guy who can put up good AAA numbers and has the speed to steal 60 bases in the season if he really was able, you know, got on base enough. So, honestly, call up Cole Garner. We called up Blackman, and granted, Blackman is of higher caliber than Cole Garner, but call up Cole Garner. We've been needing to call up Garner for like two seasons now, and they might still be holding on until next season when Spielberg is likely gone, and there could be a chance that Spielberg is traded too, because I've heard a little bit of rumoring about, you know, Spielberg could be a good match for a couple teams, and I couldn't even tell you who.
Well,
but
when it comes to Spielberg, I mean, I might be crazy. Everyone seems to be saying that he's likely gone. I still think this stems from a misunderstanding that he can leave as a free agent, but he can't. Is the team really going to non-tender him?
I think they might. He's not producing at the plate, and he's not a great fielder. There's precedent for saying, well, we're keeping the clown around the clubhouse. I mean, like, Josh Fogg was such a great clubhouse guy, and I guess they brought him back, but it was on, you know, league men's salary or whatever. Spielberg could provide starting outfield some sort of average production for another club. He's just kind of sitting on the bench for us right now and being that funny guy that everyone likes.
Right.
Which is good, because clubhouse chemistry is a good thing, and it'd be very sad to see Spielberg go. Especially since last season he was one of the only positive offensive producers. But that's not the case this season.
No.
He's at the bottom of the offensive totem pole, or at least just the outfield totem pole. I mean, Blackman's taking his lumps just recently, but Blackman's of a higher caliber, arguably, than Spielberg's.
Sure.
And he's cheaper than Spielberg's, and he's a better fielder than Spielberg's.
Well, and he's also going to be a starter instead of a bench player.
Exactly. If we're going to call up a right-handed outfielder, I mean, not call up, we need a right-handed outfielder that isn't, if we want to start Cargo in center, Spielberg's in left or right, and someone else in left or right. it needs to be Cole Garner. There's obviously something I'm missing here that maybe it's just in the AAA translation. Maybe it's in the way the organization views him that I'm not aware of. But Cole Garner needs to be in the Major League Club and not Eric Young Jr.
Well, Garner has had such a strange relationship with the organization in the sense that you can kind of get a vibe from the way the organization promotes people or the way they keep them around and so forth about how committed they are to somebody. And, like, it's basically the same thing with Eric Young. You can tell that the organization is really committed to him with the way they treat him and the way they play him and where they put him and so on and so forth. With Garner, they've gone out of their way to keep him here, but they've also not gone out of their way to really make him of any sort of priority, because they didn't they re-signed him after he left as a free agent, which means they were obviously interested, but the fact that they never purchased him until the second time he was about to leave also shows that they didn't really care if he was protected. It's really unusual. It's almost as if he's completely under their radar for almost all the time, and then when they start to notice that he's going to be leaving again, they're kind of like, oh yeah, maybe we should keep that guy. And then ask him to sign again and so forth. And then, of course, they added him to the 40-man roster this past time. But it's just, he has not taken the path of your everyday minor league player. And so he's sort of stuck in this weird, difficult to pinpoint spot in the organization's eye. You know, are they committed to him or not? I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the first people they just cut off the roster and then they re-sign him again after that. It's just one of those weird things, you know?
I just wish they'd give him the shot, because it's not like the AAA outfield is anything really to write home about at this point. I mean, you had Charlie Blackman down there, but we know what Willie Taveras is. There's no big surprises there. And I don't see a reason why Garner isn't being looked at as a major league option. And, I mean, I'd be interested. I want to, like, you know, email Rank or something about this and see what he has to say about it. But, yeah, he's just not getting the call. I don't understand why. I like Cole Garner.
All right, well, we've been going for 50 minutes now, and so I've got some food waiting for me I got to get to.
I got the same thing. We're going to the grocery store, and I'm tired.
Also, some editing and writing for tomorrow.
And I'm sick of talking to you.
Oh, that's great. You're going to have to do it again and again and again. So.
And again and again.
Let's see. Next week is the 4th, so that's going to – let's see. The week after that is the All-Star break, I believe. So – Monday.
Probably taking that one off, I'm
yes.
thinking.
Yes. I mean, we could talk about the All-Star game, but really we're not going to be able to fill a really good podcast about the All-Star game. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit afterward. But yeah, we'll probably be off on the 11th of July, which is the day before the All-Star game. So we'll be back next week on Monday the 4th, and then, plan is to take a week off, and then we'll be back on the 18th, and we'll obviously mention if any of that changes at any point. So, until next week, we're gonna take off, and on behalf of the two of us, take care.